Hello, everybody, and welcome to Whispers Radio here on AM 1600 WKKX, the Valley's Watchdog, and UPRN, the UFO Paranormal Radio Network. It is 6.07 p.m., 61 degrees. I think we're supposed to get some rain, if it's not raining already out there. I'm Jordan Klein. She's Lola Miller.
Hello, everybody.
Here with Sarah Howard. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
How was everybody's Thanksgiving, Lola? How was your Thanksgiving? Oh, yeah.
Well, the Lions lost, which was unfortunate, but, yeah, it was good. We ate late. I give up. It was nice. It really was.
That's good.
How was yours?
It was wonderful. I enjoy my family dinner holidays.
That's nice. Because a lot of people go.
Huh?
He's a schmuck.
Why?
Just because. He said he was thankful for corrections and...
It happens.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah? My family, we end up playing games. And we just play games all night, you know, after we eat. So yeah. That's what I look forward to the most. So it's fun.
That's what Kelly did. They played charades and all kinds of stuff at her house.
Yeah. That's what I look forward to most on our, like... All the get-together, like family get-together type of dinners, that's what we do. So
that's
good.
That's cool.
It's fun times.
That's fun.
Let's see. What else is going on? 2 weeks. Why do I not have the date in front of me? I'm horrible today. The last 2 weeks in December, we will not be on the air. So that's the 19th and, of course, the 26th, the day after Christmas.
And then the 2nd.
And then January 2nd, we will not be on the air.
That's right.
We come back on the 9th. We're still on Mondays, because usually we have to switch around for basketball season.
Yes.
John has informed me.
No basketball on Mondays.
We actually have a year, and starting our fourth year.
Yeah.
Starting our fourth year.
We're going to stay on the day we're on.
We don't have to switch.
Oh
we don't have to switch time slots. We don't have to switch the day.
Oh.
So I was like, wow, I was holding off on booking next year, you know, just to get, you know, figure out where we were going. But everything stays on Monday at 6 o'clock. So I'm excited about that.
Me too.
Give everybody, yeah.
Oh, I am.
Well, I'm sure UPRN's probably pretty happy too, because every year they got to switch us around on the network, which is probably pretty tough.
Are you happy, Joe? Are you happy now?
Yeah. So I didn't even tell him. I didn't even bring it up. He didn't ask.
Well, he knows now.
So, yeah, that's exciting.
Yeah.
I decided today's guest because, well, we haven't had a Bigfoot guest in, I want to say, a year and a half, 2 years. This guy might have actually been our last Bigfoot guest. It was in 2009. Like, I was looking up because he's been on the show before. The last time we had it was like August of 2009, and I was like, wow, has it been that long since we had a Bigfoot guest? And yeah, it has been pretty long. So I thought, well, let's appease some Bigfoot fans out there, because I've gotten emails and I've gotten like letters saying, you know, hey, you know, what about a Bigfoot guest, or I've had a Bigfoot sighting, or I've done that. So we actually have Jeff Hilling is going to be our guest tonight, and he wrote The Great Bigfoot Film Mystery: What Really Happened on October 20th, 1967. And I think he was writing the book the last time he was on.
Okay.
Jeff, you with us?
I'm here.
Hey, how's it going? Long time
no
talk.
Great to be on your show again.
Well, it's good to have you. Like I was just telling our listeners, we haven't had you, you know, it was a few years before since we've had a Bigfoot show.
Wow. Well, I think I was on in probably 2009. Yeah, I don't know. 2010,
it was August of 2009.
Wow.
That was a while ago.
It took you that long to write a book?
You know what?
I said it took you that long.
Let me tell you something here. The book was supposed to come out last year.
Ow.
About this time of the year last year.
Uh-huh.
I had the thing almost complete.
What happened?
And then my hard drive crashed.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Did you...
This book was originally supposed to be released this time last year.
Did you lose it all and have to rewrite it?
I decided on that, yeah, as opposed to paying some joker, you know, $1,500 to get what kind of data they wanted to off the computer. So little lesson in that. But you know what? I think it was all for better. I think God's providence made it happen, so I would write even a better book.
Self-edited.
Yeah.
You took all the stuff you didn't really care enough to write again.
Well, you know, I went a little different direction with it, and I found out a little more information of it that it didn't have in the first one.
Really?
And it was still in my hard drive upstairs in my head, so it worked out for the best. The book's a much better book because of it.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
So tell us about the book.
Well, the book is called The Great Bigfoot Film Mystery, and it's brand new. You can get it through my website, pattersonfilm.com, exclusively. And it's doing really well. For an independent book, it's doing great.
Now, can you get the book on Amazon or anything like that?
No, not even that. I might go to that route someday. But it's doing fine right now on my website. And I'm one of those guys, you know what, I don't care if I sell a million of them. This is a great book. People want it, they can come get it. I might advance it out there a little further, try to market it a little more, but people are buying it. They like it.
Have you sold a million yet?
No, heck no.
How well are we talking?
Yeah, they're a million seller. I got a million of them in my cellar. Enough of the vaudeville. Okay. No, it's a great book. And what it does is it discusses the mystery of the Patterson film. This is a very mysterious, enigmatic piece of film clip.
Now, explain, if you will, for our listeners, what the Patterson film is. Someone might not, I'm sure everybody's familiar with it, but not necessarily the name.
Yeah, it's the typical Bigfoot footage you see if you were to see a picture of Bigfoot. That's where that stems from, is the Patterson film. It's that minute-long clip of color film from 1967 where you see this mysterious creature, hairy man, wild man, man-beast, whatever you want to call it, Bigfoot, Sasquatch, the Yeren, the Yeti, whatever. And it's roaming through the wilderness of Northern California. And everybody's seen the footage. It can't be missed. And this was taken by Roger Patterson back in 1967 and his cohort, Bob Gimlin.
Yeah.
And this book discusses all aspects of the mystery, not just the film itself, but what are the controversies? What are the logical implications of this film? What are the arguments? Do the arguments hold up against the film? And does the film hold up against the arguments? I discuss all these things in my book.
Now, Lola, you had a question?
Oh, it just as quick as it came, it left. I'm sorry.
Now, I want to ask Jeff, how do you feel about the film? Do you believe, because after all the research that you've done, do you believe it's legit, or do you believe that you know it's a fraud?
Well, I'm a healthy skeptic. I look at things logically, but yet I don't buy into things. I analyze the film. I analyze all the information about the film, and I have come on the side of, I tend to believe it is a genuine piece of film footage. But in my book, I also take the other approach, too. I also look into, what if this was a fake? How would it have to have been done? And I even go through the steps logically on what would have to have been done back then to build a creature and film a creature that looks so believable back in 1967 that has people mystified for decades.
Now, out of my own ignorance, is this like the first major Bigfoot sighting? Like, you know, I guess of our...
This is the first major piece of film. This is the only film evidence other than a couple of bad photographs of a alleged creature. But this is the only piece of film footage worth looking at.
Okay.
Even to this day, as far as I'm concerned. There are some, I mean, I look at everything, but what is really holding up? What is really piquing our curiosity? What is still on the table is not being a fake, whereas every other one you see might be real, might be fake. Who knows? The quality isn't there. The Patterson film is the first Bigfoot film.
Okay.
And it is the best. And it stands to reason that, excuse me, the reason we see that is the best film is because of the format. back in 1967, they were using 16-millimeter footage. And that's something that will never be used again to capture Bigfoot or whatever. People just don't use it anymore. It's not practical.
Yeah.
I don't even know if you can buy the film. I mean, there might be a little underground scene where you can, you know, it might be a small lab somewhere that develops them and processes the film. There probably are, but it's really not a format that anybody would use. It's expensive. You can't see what you just shot like you can every other medium. And that's another interesting aspect about this film. When Roger Patterson took that film, it was on the last of his reel. That film was shot in one take and without the knowledge of what he had captured on film. So if that was a fake film, if that was a setup, he nailed it perfect on the first try. This wasn't something that was done over and over and over again, and he picked the best one and,
yeah,
you know, made adjustments with the actor and the suit and that sort of thing. This was done in one clip.
What was the rest of the film?
It was pretty mundane footage of them two on horseback, just going through the forest, the wilderness.
Were they, like, searching for Bigfoot? Were they doing anything, or did they just happen upon him?
No, they were deliberately looking for the creature.
Okay.
He had written a book back in 1966 called Do Abominable Snowmen of America Exist? And it was a very groundbreaking, one of the first books about Bigfoot. You know, they didn't really even call it Bigfoot then. They called it the, you know, Abominable Snowmen of America. North American Yeti. And after that, about a year later, he went to go make a film to kind of support his book and his ideas and hopefully catch something. He was creating a film. And what he had captured on film was exactly what he went out to look for. Now, you can make the case, well, maybe it was a hoax, maybe it wasn't. That's what I outline in my book and go through all the arguments, both pro and con. See, I come into this book a little differently. I'm not trying to tell you that this film is real, and I'm not trying to tell you it's a fake. What I do is I look at both sides of the arguments.
Well, that's good.
Weigh the strengths and weaknesses and let the people decide for themselves. I even go into, you know, well, what would we have to do to create a piece of film like this? I step-by-step instructions, build your own Bigfoot.
Now, how long have you been researching Bigfoot?
Well, off and on for quite some time, but really seriously in the past 5 years.
Okay.
Just very, very deeply. You know, I've always had an interest in it most of my life and read books about it.
Have you personally ever seen it?
No, I have not.
No. Have you went on any expeditions, that kind of thing?
No, it's not really my style. I do go out for walks in the woods all the time.
I hike.
I live in a very forested area with hundreds and hundreds of acres of state land, and I'm out there looking. I mean, if I see something, I'll tell you, and you'll know it'll be true if I see it, because I'm not one of these guys who claims to see them out under, you know, every bush and hear them, you know. You know, I hear weird things all the time out there.
Yeah.
I can't tell you what they are. Now, if you watch some of these Bigfoot shows we see on TV nowadays, you think every hoop and holler and whistle and pop and click in the woods they hear is a Bigfoot. You know what I mean? Ooh, hear that? That was a Bigfoot. I mean, it was probably a hoot owl. It was probably a, you know, who knows?
Yeah, we actually had I think it was our last Bigfoot show we had, was the guy who said he thought he found it in Arizona and wasn't leaving Arizona until he
got real evidence, yeah. So,
we haven't heard from him since.
No, he offered to fly us out there, but he said he wouldn't fly us home until we saw one. So we stayed in West Virginia. You know.
Yeah, don't hold your breath.
I know. That's what we were afraid of, that we'd be trapped out in the Arizona desert forever. You know, but my argument with those is that they're obviously not immortal. So they have to be reproducing, and if that's the case, then there have to be communities. And I just don't believe in this day and age that you could have a whole community of something and fly completely under the radar, particularly in this country. I mean, I realize we have huge tracts of land that, you know, nobody has been on, but I just find it hard to believe that you know, you could, that they could exist so completely anonymous, you know?
Well, we do discover animals all the time. Every year there are new animals discovered. And the gorilla was, 150 years ago, was the same status as Bigfoot. Back in the late 1880s, it was just something people talked about, and some people didn't believe it existed, and some people did. So these things do tend to be elusive if they are real. There are a lot of animals are elusive. Bears are elusive, and there's plenty of them, but they're such an elusive creature. It's not that common. You know, people don't even find their bodies, bears. You don't see them dead. And they're very plentiful.
Now, we've heard people talk about that too. I believe they say the acid in the ground or something like is what disintegrates it.
They don't get hit by cars. They tend to go someplace to die, and they the ground gets them. The birds of the air get them. Scavengers.
Well, I wish the deer would become more elusive.
Because you always see, you know. We got a caller.
Yeah, this is Bill. He's got a question for
Bill,
you.
Bill, how you doing?
Okay, yeah. Now, I'd like to throw something out there. There's a condition that some humans get. It's like one in a million or one in 2 or 3 million where they have hair all over the body.
You're talking like JoJo the dog-faced boy?
Let's say somebody's 6'4", 6'5", 6'6", and believe me, these people, you know, don't go out in the public much. What if? This is what people have seen in the past, and it just escalated. You know, I'm just throwing that out there.
That's a very good point. In fact, I actually have that on my website, PattersonFilm.com. You can go and check it out. It's a condition called hypertrichosis. And what it is like JoJo the dog-faced boy, circus freaks, and people have suffered with this hair condition that goes either over the entire face and sometimes even most of the body.
Yeah, exactly.
So, could that be the answer for Bigfoot? I wouldn't doubt it. What if people were in a sense, wild men? They lived in a very wild state for a while. And, maybe they were Indians have claimed to have said they were a tribe or a race of their Indians.
Yeah,
I don't know if that's true or not.
Wild men out there, and this could be, something like this. So Bigfoot could be, something that's, not really ape, but man,
Yeah, I definitely am with you on that theory. That is a definite possibility. I think that's it's a better possibility than some propose. And think it is possible.
If it turns out that, someone comes across someone like that, and now they would be more elusive, that's for sure. Would that ruin the, the stigma about Bigfoot? Or, what would happen, you think?
Yeah,
do they
still want
to find a Bigfoot,
That would change everything, the way people view Bigfoot, the way people think about Bigfoot.
Yeah.
People want to hunt Bigfoot if they knew it was a person, for certain. That would definitely change a lot of...
there's the money,
we would know what it is.
Exactly.
A lot of people come up with theories what it is and what it isn't, and we really don't know.
Right.
What do we have to go by? We have footprints. We have a lot of alleged films. We have a lot of alleged sightings.
I mean, that's pretty much all we're going off of, though, is footprints.
Yeah, and if that was the case, they could be buried like any other human, and you wouldn't find remains or stuff like that, There's a lot of stuff out here in this world we're not really sure about.
They might put their dead bodies on like a raft and like burn them at sea.
That's the Vikings.
Like a rug to barrel, if it was a human.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Well, hey,
thanks,
Bill, thanks a lot. Jeff, if you want to hang on, I think we're going to take a break here, bottom of the hour break. Our guest is Jeff Hilling. We're talking about his book, The Great Bigfoot Film Mystery. What really happened on October 20th, 1967. You're listening to Whispers Radio, and we'll be right back.
Pulling out at first dawn's light.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Whispers Radio here on AM 1600 WKKX, the Valley's Watchdog, and UPRN, the UFO Paranormal Radio Network. It is 6:31 p.m., 61 degrees here in downtown Wheeling. I'm Jordan Klein, she's Lola Miller, and our guest is Mr. Jeff Hilling. His book, The Great Bigfoot Film Mystery, What Really Happened on October 20th, 1967. Jeff, you with us?
I'm here.
Hey, during the break, I actually did watch the video, just so I was up with everything we were talking about and made sure I was familiar with it. To me, it kind of looks like a guy just strolling along.
A guy as in a guy in a suit or a
real... I don't know that because just it's so blurry, not defined. You can't tell if it's just a man in a naked and hairy or...
What we're seeing when most of us watch it on the internet is something very low resolution.
Yeah, my thought though is like his gait, his stroll, his strut. You know, just the way he kind of moves. It's just like a guy flinging his arms a little bit. Doesn't look like very wild. Looks very relaxed.
Well, yeah, it does look really relaxed, and to me that tends to lend credibility. Now, some people might interpret that as being, well, it's just a guy hanging out, walking. Well, if you think it's easy to fool people in a gorilla suit, I encourage people to try it. Put together a suit, walk around a little bit, see how natural and smooth it looks. See, that's the thing. The mystifying thing about this film is it seems so simple.
Yeah.
It seems like, wow, this is just probably a guy in a gorilla suit, you know, or, gosh, this is a Bigfoot. You know, a lot of people fall on one side or the other, but when they really get into the intricacies, you look at the film in a good quality version, you blow it up a little bit, you start seeing muscle movements that are impossible to replicate through costumery, at least that we know of.
Well, I know from watching, and this, and I'm not saying this to be smart, old Tarzan movies and, you know, movies like that, where they're trying to, because they obviously can't use real gorillas in them, you know, and it is so obvious. It is just, you know, the suits don't look real. And we're talking about bigger budget movies back in those days, mm-hmm. you know. So, yeah, I would think it would be hard. But, yeah, when you're looking at anything that's, you know, been posted onto the internet, of course, you're not getting to see all of the detail to it.
Exactly. And what you were seeing was, I actually mentioned that in my book, The Great Bigfoot Film Mystery. I mentioned the people who used to do those films, people like George Burroughs, Janos Prokosha, Bob Burns, uh-huh. and Crash Corrigan. These guys were experts in gorilla suit acting. They went to something called ape school, and they would appear in things like Gilligan's Island, I Love Lucy, Abbott and Costello, Three Stooges always had a gorilla on their shows, at least every other movie, it seemed like.
Yeah.
And part of the reason they didn't look real is the costumery. And some of the costumes were pretty good for back then, the gorilla suits. But what really was the giveaway was the gait. And when you understand what gait is G-A-I-T. It's the art and science of seeing motion, how things move. How movement flows. And that's why when you put a guy in a gorilla suit, it looks like a guy in a gorilla suit versus a real gorilla. Gorillas have a motion that's indicative to themselves. It's a natural motion.
Uh-huh.
And people can try to mimic it, and they do fairly well, but it's only, you know, 80% at best.
Well, because their limbs are differently proportioned than ours are.
Exactly. They have different style limbs, and we're trying to act like we have short legs when they, you know, we have long legs. So you try to hide the rest of it in a suit, and the motion's not going to be there. It's not going to be natural and fluid.
Yeah.
Just like if they were to try to imitate us, their motion wouldn't look like a human. They might try to. You see, monkeys and gorillas try to mimic people in certain ways, or their motion's always different.
Yeah, it is. And I'm just trying to imagine Cheetah walking.
Yeah. But the thing is, with the Bigfoot creature, when this thing has been recreated several times. People have tried to put together a believable Patterson film in recreation form. And I document that in my book as well, all the recreations that have been done that have failed, and different budgets too, some of them low budget, some of them very high budget attempts with professionals using modern day techniques, materials, things that Roger Patterson did not have at his disposal.
Well, I know that that show, it's a relatively new one, faked or real, or I don't know, something like that. But they take different things, and somebody had what they considered to be a Bigfoot film. It wasn't Patterson. This one was from a long distance away, and they tried to recreate it with somebody out there running from hillock to hillock, you know, and they couldn't get it to match whatever the film was either, you know.
I think I remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the Memorial Day footage, and I think that one was kind of inconclusive because the film, they couldn't analyze it any further because it was shot on VHS, which is horrible format, but then again, so is a lot of the digital things that people shoot nowadays. You can't analyze it any further. You know, so the best they could do is try to match the speed.
Yeah.
And that's why they did that test. And I think the guy came close. I don't remember.
Well, it was hard.
I did see that one, though.
Yeah, it was so far away. And he was
very far away.
Because it was real kind of rolling hills, kind of. So you'd see it, then you wouldn't see it. Then you'd see it, then you wouldn't see it as it ran across, you know, this one line of sight. But it wasn't in a frame all the time. Yeah, I remember that.
Now, I want to ask your opinion on something, Jeff. And I'm sure you came across this in your research of the film. Noor's boy actually brought it back to my attention because I've heard it before and I forgot about it until he asked about it. About the Bigfoot in the film being a woman.
Yes.
What are your thoughts, feelings on that?
Well, the creature obviously shows that at one point in the film you can see the breast of the creature. And this is very odd because back in 1967 there was no such thing as a crypto-erotic costumery, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Why would somebody modify a suit and put breasts on it? That is an extra step that would take a lot of ingenuity, a lot of creativity to build that sort of thing. There's no example of that in Hollywood that I even know of, especially at that time period. When we look at costumes of that period, what were the best costumes we had to choose from back then? There's two examples. One is Planet of the Apes. The other one is Stanley Kubrick's magnum opus, 2001 A Space Odyssey, where at the beginning you got the testy troglodytes raising heck underneath the monolith. Do you remember that scene at the very beginning? Yeah. And those are about as good as Hollywood did at the time. And when you watch those films again, you'll notice that they're okay. They're pretty good, but they're not very believable, these costumes. When you know, you can see the masks and you can see how they do it, especially if you pause it and you look at it. The bodies look nothing like we see in the Patterson film, nor do they display really any muscular definition and movement like we can see when the creature walks in the Patterson film.
I'm watching it again right now. There is a lot of it could have been a really, really big fella in a tight little suit, you know, to be that direct and filling. Because, you know, I'm thinking about people wearing a costume, you know, especially like you said in the leg area. You know, there's extra material flapping around. There's, you know, nothing's really form fitting. Well, this one's, if it was a costume, it's very form fitting.
Yeah, it was not only form fitting, but there had to have been some sort of a muscular costume underneath. But even then, people have tried doing that in this day and age. People have caught on to that in the special effects world in the past 20 years. They start building muscle suits, and even before that. But the thing is, with the muscle suit, you still don't see that kind of definition pop through. Usually what happens is it just bulks you up more. You can't really get definition out of muscle suits as much as, especially back then. I mean, this kind of thing was never done in Hollywood, muscular definition through the suits. That wasn't until recent times that people tried to attempt it, And even still nowadays, when you see things, we've gotten away from costumery in the movies. What they're into now is special effects with digitization, computer animation, manipulating pixels, basically. Sometimes they'll use a costume as the base and then manipulate images onto that in the movies. But back then, there was none of that. What you saw on cameras, what you got, basically, what exactly what they were seeing. So it was all done at the costume level back then. And what we see in the Patterson film, could that have been created by an amateur back in 1967 with limited materials? Really, there was only one gorilla suit you could have bought, and that was from the Philip Morris Company, maybe a couple other places.
And it looked just nothing like this one.
No, these are Halloween costumes.
Yeah.
So you would have had to do some serious modification. You would have had to put some breasts on this thing for whatever reason, I don't know. Especially seeing you barely even see him until one frame or two. It was almost, you couldn't really even plan it like that if you were trying to make a costume this well. So that's something superfluous that would not have had to have been done if you're going to make a hoax.
You know what
else? You had to go the extra mile. And they didn't have materials like we have nowadays to work with. They didn't have craft stores with all these materials and endless supplies of things we seemingly have nowadays. You know, you can access anything nowadays via the internet and this and that. You would have had to have known some kind of techniques and knowledge that even the creators of the best special effects in the Hollywood movies back then, it was beyond their knowledge, too, because they weren't creating stuff that well.
You know what, too? That, the fur or hair or whatever you want to call it, looks real. And usually when you see something from a costume shop, even if they attempt to make it look real, it doesn't. That would have had to have been horribly expensive if you're going to use that quality of fur to make something that large.
Oh, exactly. I mean, even the gorilla suits back then weren't cheap. They didn't have a China to import them from, you know?
Yeah.
Stuff was pretty custom, and it was pretty expensive even just for something that was just a typical gorilla suit. And like you were pointing out, Jordan, the things don't fit that well either. You put on a suit, it might be tight in some areas and loose in others. This thing would have had to have been custom-tailored fit. And even in the arguments, when you hear people like Bob Hieronymus, who claimed to be in the suit, that came out a few years back, and he claimed to use a Philip Morris costume. He never claimed that the thing was tailored to him, which I find very interesting.
Because it fits so well.
Exactly. If I was going to say, okay, you come over and wear this gorilla suit, well, yeah, it's going to be tight in certain areas, loose in other areas. I mean, yeah, you can try to bulk it up with some padding here and there, but then it just looks bulky. You look like the Michelin Man. You know, you look like the goalie for the Islanders. You know, it's just big. It's not defined. It's not just shoving pillows in there to fill up some space.
Yeah, I'm watching actually videos on YouTube now of a silverback gorilla walking upright. It kind of has a little swagger to it.
That is great. I'm glad you mentioned that because I saw that clip the other day on television.
Oh yeah.
Good resolution. I was watching that over and over again. Now, tell me something. If you saw that same clip and you disregarded the background, because I believe they're at a gorilla farm someplace that it's obvious in the background. Now, if you just saw that clip and it was just woods.
And I was thinking that, it kind of looks like a man in a suit.
Would you think that was a man in the suit? I asked myself the same question when I saw that a couple weeks ago.
I've looked at about four different videos.
I would say, I would say it's about 50-50. I wouldn't have been able to tell if that gorilla walking was real or not. It could have been a suit.
Like, there's even one of the gorilla just standing there. And, I mean, just him standing there, it looks like a man standing there with, like, I don't know, the arms are humongous. But, I mean, really, I mean, the posture,
exactly.
Everything else looks like a man.
Exactly. The way it walks, it's gait, it's really weird. You can't figure it out. And I find that amazing because we know the answer to that riddle. But if you just, in your mind, just take yourself out of it, imagine the context being different in the background. Imagine somebody coming up
in the middle of the woods.
This is Bigfoot here. you know, or this is a gorilla I found in the woods. You couldn't tell me it wasn't a guy in a suit because it looked so weird when the way he was walking.
Yeah. Yeah, because he has like a little swagger. You know, he's not like hunched over walking on his hands, you know, like
it's almost like the, you know, if you did that, it would almost be like the opposite of the Patterson film, because we know this one is a real creature. But it just goes to show how close the Patterson film is to something that is real. It's borderline paranormal.
Yeah. I mean, this one doesn't swing his arms as much as the Patterson film, because that, you know, the creature in the Patterson film has, like, some big swings. And when he turns around, I mean, it almost looks like his hands are stretched out.
He did.
You know, but,
yeah.
But this monkey does swing his arms.
That is a signature move. I point that out in my book. That move, that Bigfoot walk, if you were just saw the motion, if you just saw a silhouette of something walking like that, I mean, everybody knows that motion, that trademark swinging of the arms.
Uh-huh.
That was never done in any kind of media until we saw it in the Patterson film. Every time we see any kind of monster or ape-like creature or gorilla, they never walked like that. And the gorillas, you would think if somebody was mimicking a creature in the woods that was supposed to be like a hairy man ape, that they probably would have been influenced by TV so much, or movies, that when they would have hoaxed this, that possibly they would have just went with their intuition and went and did kind of ape-like movements. No, we see something completely different in the Patterson film. It's a brand new motion, which I think lends to it being closer to not a hoax.
Maybe that's why it stood out so much. You know, it's like, oh, well, it's doing something different. Hmm.
It's possible, but, you know, when you get into the psychology of the way people think and the way people are influenced by their culture and media, and the pop culture in particular through movies and TV and whatnot, people tend not to deviate too far from that. You know, when you paint a picture of an alien, it always looks like the same thing since somebody first drew it. You know, you paint a picture of this. Well, if you're going to fake something, like a Bigfoot footage, I would think that you would play it safe and just mimic the typical more monkey-like movements, as opposed to, hey, you're going to walk like this, you're going to lumber around, you're going to do the over-the-shoulder look, and that sort of thing. Just my perspective. I could be wrong on that, but it's just something to think about.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Real interesting. Watching this video kind of makes me go, huh, look at that. You know, it just, in my brain, it's trying to cycle around all of it.
And I point that out, too, in my book, that, you know, your mind vacillates between the two positions when you watch this film. This isn't just about Bigfoot. This is also about the film. The film itself is a mysterious piece of work. Sometimes your mind sees it, and it believes that it's a Bigfoot creature. And other times, your mind sees it, and you're convinced that it's a man in a suit. And there's a vacillation that goes on back and forth within your mind. It's a psychological effect this film has on your mind.
Now, how do you feel about people, because you are a Bigfoot researcher, you know, well-populated areas, oh, yeah, I saw Bigfoot last weekend, or I saw, you know, in the more, I don't want to say, like, urban, but I mean...
Well, I just was on YouTube. They've got all these ones about skunk. I don't even know what a skunk ape is, but, you know, they're South Carolina, Florida. And is it Bigfoot or is it a skunk ape? Well, I don't even know what that is. I didn't know we had those here, but, you know, it's... So, I guess there are things out there that... But... I don't know what I'm trying to say. That Patterson film, if it were faked, why would he, because you'd want real clean, clear evidence, right? Especially if you've got all this money invested in, you know, a suit that looks real and all this kind of stuff. The camera shaking so badly and getting ground, you know, the pebbles on the ground and the treetops, before he gets really focused in on the image again, you would think that if it were a setup, it would all flow. You know what I'm saying.
Yeah, and the reason we see the shaking at the beginning is because he was thrown from the horse.
Oh, well.
And so he's trying to, he basically grabbed the camera and while he was falling off the horse, ran by a stump and stabilized himself. Now, recently we've had some stabilizations done of this film where they took the shake out of the equation so people can no longer say, well, it's just a shaky film. What can I tell? They've taken that out. And the results are amazing because people thought that this would look obviously like a man in a suit as soon as this was done. And actually what it's done, it's lent more credibility to the film. Which it should have fallen apart. The more we scrutinize this film, the easier it should fall apart at some point. We should be able to see some sort of costumery going on or some details that would blow the lid right off of it. But instead, the opposite has occurred. It has actually solidified this as being more genuine than we first thought. Because back in the 70s when we were playing this on TV, it was shot at a distance. You're looking at it at a, you know, an old TV set. And now we have the best scans and stabilization available of this film. And the more we stabilize it, digitize it, the more it amazes. The more it seems to be even more real than we thought it was 10 years ago. This film is just, it's built up a reputation throughout the years just because of the technology it's been subjected to. You know, if you look at a $20 bill and you look at it under a microscope, you can tell if it's fake right away. You just starts to fall apart.
Yeah.
What has happened with the Patterson film? We put that under the microscope for 40 years. Technology has been improving, allowed us to do more things with it. And the opposite is true. We're starting to see that this film seems to be genuine. But I also point out another little thing here. If this was a fake, which it is possible, it's just a man in a suit. I state in my book that it's even more amazing than if it were real.
Yeah.
Because this is an illusion that can never be replicated. It's been tried to be replicated.
And created by amateurs, you know, nonetheless.
Yeah, we should have dozens upon dozens upon dozens of alleged Bigfoot films just put out by hoaxers that have mystified people for years and years. We don't have any, really. I mean, there is no second best when it comes to Bigfoot footage. This is the film that keeps amazing people decade after decade.
Well, what is this leg bulge that on YouTube, again, that's where I'm looking at this.
Some people claim all kinds of crazy things. They're starting to see, you know, gunshot wounds and all kinds of nonsense in this. But what we're seeing there is some sort of a bulge. I don't know. It could be a hernia. People have just speculated it's just a film anomaly, a smudge on the celluloid of the film. Some people say it was a muscle bulge, you know, just muscle movement or possibly a herniated muscle movement. I don't know what it is. But you can notice other muscle movements in the creature as well. And some of these blown up pieces of footage. And keep in mind, when you're watching stuff on YouTube, it's dreadful quality compared to
yes, it is.
Some of the things you can get your hands on. Compared to the original, you know, it looks, it's not very.
There's one here that
quality.
It's all green.
Yeah, I saw
everything
that one too.
Is green.
I want to ask you, did he follow the Bigfoot after that? I mean, when the film ends, what happened next?
Yeah, I document that in my book. Basically, they trailed it up into the woods, and then they lost it in the pine straw floor. In other words, the tracks.
Yeah.
It had gone long ahead of them, but they went and followed it, even though the film ran out. And they followed the tracks so far, but, you know, pine straw is difficult to find much in there.
Yeah. Well, that is fascinating. I mean, I knew I had seen the film before on different things, but see, it's stuff like that I would love to see the actual original, you know, run through a 16 millimeter projector.
Yeah,
you know.
There's only a few original copies left.
I got a projector if you want to.
Yeah. I got one too.
That and the Zapruder film are the two that I've just.
Which one's that?
Kennedy.
Okay.
The Kennedy Assassination.
Yeah.
That's the only film that has been more analyzed than the Patterson film, than the Kennedy film. Other than that, it's the Patterson film. People have looked at that almost as much as the Zapruder film, as far as analysis.
Boy, I'd give anything. You know, that's when I get so nibby. It's like, I just really want to see it for real. Because I know how, you know, on the internet, my gosh, you can manipulate anything now with digital camp, you know, digital stuff. And
exactly. But the original Patterson film was just recently by Bill Munns digitized frame by frame. Keep in mind that this film, too, isn't just a motion picture. Because it was shot on 16-millimeter film, we have hundreds of individual pictures as well. Whereas nowadays, when you look at it on digital format, you don't have that luxury.
Yeah.
This is a frame-by-frame. Every single frame can be analyzed. And then also the motion of the collective of all these pictures put together creates a motion picture. So we've got a couple different ways to analyze the Patterson film, and we see magnificent detail in this thing.
Well, and now with the way that they can refurbish old movie film, you know, they can make it like new, doing it frame by frame.
You can digitize it,
yeah,
and that's what they have recently done with the Patterson film.
Oh, I'd love to be able to see that. I would.
Well, I think some of the newer documentaries have been playing some pretty clear versions of the Patterson film.
Yeah, there's a few I looked through that looked like not only were they clear, but they zoomed up really good on it.
Yeah, and if you play with your TV remote and rewind it when it comes on your DVR player, you can get some pretty good quality images on your television and some of these documentaries, as opposed to watching them on YouTube, which is a dreadful quality.
Well, see, John, he has a 97-inch screen at his house. It's actually for Steelers football, but you know, if we could get our hands on something, you know, or figure out where it was that we could get it real clear, we could do it on 97 inches.
97 inches?
Yes.
Gosh, that's perfect size for your neighbors to watch it on.
It's a perfect size for the whole neighborhood, honestly.
Yeah.
But yeah. That'd be cool. Well, it's for Steelers games, you see. You can tell where his priorities lie, but, you know.
Gosh, 97 inches, that's like being in the...
Is it like a projector on the wall, or is it like an actual...
Yeah, it's back... So I don't know. What it is. I tried to turn it on one time when I was feeding the cats, and I couldn't even begin to turn on the power. So
they should have called that television the Sasquatch.
Yeah, really.
Good. Jeff, we are out of time. I want to thank you very much, and I want to get my hands on this book.
I'll get you one out. They're going out the door really quick here.
Yeah,
so
I
if you want one, order one. It's PattersonFilm.com. Go to the website. The book's called The Great... The Great Bigfoot Film Mystery. And you can get it through my website, PattersonFilm.com.
Okay.
Well, it really happened on October 20th, 1967. And I like the fact that you look at both ends of it.
Yeah.
Jeff, we'll have you back on sometime. Definitely, you're my favorite Bigfoot guest.
Hey, you're my favorite show. I love it.
I take that as a compliment, considering you've done Coast to Coast and everything else.
Yeah, really?
Oh, yeah. Well, except for Coast to Coast.
Oh, well, you know. Well, geez. Take it from me. All right, Jeff. Till next time, man. Thanks.
All right, man.
All right, bye. See ya.
Bye.
We are out of time. Next week, we do have Lorna Byrne, the Irish mystic, calling from Ireland.
Yeah.
So that'll be a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. Until next week, everybody, don't be afraid, only believe.